I want to read tonight, please, in chapter 13 of the book of Numbers. Chapter 13. I want to break into the reading at verse 26. And they went and came to Moses and to Aaron and to all the congregation of the children of Israel unto the wilderness of Paran to Kadesh, and brought back word unto them, and unto all the congregation, and showed them the fruit of the land. And they told him and said, We came unto the land whither thou sentest us, and surely it floweth with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great. And moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea and by the coast of Jordan. And Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, Let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it. But the men that went up with him said, We be not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. And they brought up an evil report of the land which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, The land through which we have gone to search it, it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof, and all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature. And there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which come of the giants, and we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight. Chapter 14. And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron, and the whole congregation said unto them, Would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God we had died in this wilderness, and wherefore hast the Lord brought us unto this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and our children should be a prey? Were it not better for us to return into Egypt? And they said one to another, Let us make a captain, and let us return unto Egypt. Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel, and Joshua the son of Nun, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, which were of them that searched the land, rent their clothes. And they spake unto all the company of the children of Israel, saying, The land which we pass through to search it, it is an exceeding good land. If the Lord delight in us, then he will bring us into this land, and give it us, a land which flowed with milk and honey. Only rebel not ye against the Lord, neither fear ye the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their defense is departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Fear them not. But all the congregation bade stone them with stones. And the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of the congregation before all the children of Israel. The Lord said unto Moses, How long will this people provoke me? And how long will it be ere they believe me for all the signs which I have showed among them? I will smite them with a pestilence, and disinherit them, and will make of thee a greater nation and mightier than they. And Moses said unto the Lord, Then the Egyptians shall hear it, for thou broughtest up this people in thy might from among them, and they will tell it to the inhabitants of this land, for they have heard that thou, Lord, art among the people, and that thou, Lord, are seen face to face, and that thy cloud standeth over them, and that thou goest before them by daytime in a pillar of cloud, and in a pillar of fire by night. Now, if thou shalt kill all this people as one man, then the nations which have heard the fame of thee will speak, saying, because the Lord was not able to bring this people into the land which he sware unto them, wherefore he has slain them in the wilderness. Now, look further over, please. Verse 36. And the men which Moses sent to search the land, who returned and made all the congregation to murmur against him, by bringing up a slander upon the land, even those men that did bring up the evil report upon the land, died by the plague before the Lord. And then, if you'll drop down again, verse 43, for the Amalekites and the Canaanites are there before you, and ye shall fall by the sword, because ye turned away from the Lord. Therefore the Lord will not be with you. But they presumed to go up onto the hilltop. Nevertheless, the ark of the covenant of the Lord and Moses departed not out of the camp. Then the Amalekites came down, and the Canaanites which dwelt in that hill, and smote them and discomfited them even unto Hormah. Now look at the verse or two in chapter 15, please, towards the end of the chapter. We'll read just the verses and then we'll try and fill in the details for you. And read that verse 37. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, and bid them that they make them fringes in the borders of their garments throughout their generations, and that they put upon the fringe of the borders a riband of blue, and it shall be unto you for a fringe, that ye may look upon it and remember all the commandments of the Lord, and do them, and that ye seek not after your own heart and your own eyes, after which ye used to go a-whoring, that ye may remember and do all my commandments and be holy unto your God. I am the Lord your God, which brought you out of the land of Egypt to be your God. I am the Lord your God. Now I want to read just one short passage in the Epistle to the Colossians, please. The Epistle to the Colossians and chapter 3. And verse 1. If ye then be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ sitteth on the right hand of God. Set your affection on things above, not on things on the earth. For ye are dead, ye died, and your life is hid with Christ in God. When Christ, who is our life, shall appear, then shall ye also appear with him in glory. The Lord bless to us the reading of his word. Now, a little earlier on in the meetings, we pointed out that from chapter 10 of the book of Numbers until we come to chapter 14, those particular chapters are the chapters that bring us up here to Kadesh Barnea. And then you'll notice that the chapters from 15 to chapter 20, that gives to us the details of the wandering here, as you see in the chart, the wanderings of the people of Israel, until finally, at Kadesh Barnea, now, after discipline and government has overtaken them, so often, within these 38 long years, it's evident that the reading of the passages that we have referred to make it abundantly clear that there was no progress, no development within these 38 years. And of course that was because of the government of God, until all those who come out of the land of Egypt and who had refused to go up into the land died in the wilderness. They said it would have been better for us had we remained in Egypt. It would have been better for us if we had died in the wilderness. And of course God heard them, and in government God gave them their desire. That's exactly where they died. They died in the wilderness. You know, sometimes we desire things of God as the people of God, and it surprises us at times when He gives to us just what we want. And then finally, we found out in His government that it's not really what we needed, and it never was for our blessing in the first place. So I believe it's most important what we say, and what we say to God, and what we ask for, because after a little while of contemplation in His presence, we come to the conclusion, if God gave us that, would we be any better off? And we find when we have got it, we're not the what better spiritually. So you see, God heard them, and God says, well, I'll give you your desire. And governmentally, He buried them here in the wilderness. Now the chapters that we have read bring us up to the particular wanderings of the people of Israel, because what I read to you was God allowing, no, I say allowing because I didn't read to you the book of Deuteronomy chapter 1, but if you had read the book of Deuteronomy chapter 1, you would find that really, when God gave directions for these spies to go up, to spy out the land, you would nearly think that from the reading of the book of Numbers chapter 13, where we have read, that it was God's will that they should go up and spy out the land. But you see, when you read in the book of Deuteronomy chapter 1, the Spirit of God actually tells us that the people approached God, and they said, well now, we would like some further information about this land. Now God had said to them, it's a land that flows with milk and honey. It's a land of hills and valleys that are watered from heaven. It's a good land and a great land, and He says, I will bring you into it. Well now, the book of Deuteronomy indicates to us in chapter 1 that here were men who desired further information. You see, it seems to me very foolish that they should desire further information from what God had already told them in relation to the land. Well now, God says, all right, choose out 12 men from your tribes and let them go up and let them view the land. And of course, in the early part of the book of Numbers chapter 13, you find these spies go up. Now what did they find? Did they find anything contrary to the mind of God? Did they find anything that was absolutely contrary to what He had told them? No, no. In fact, they found it to be just what He said. And you'll remember, there they were able to bring back the grapes of Eshcol, and two men carrying it upon the pole. I don't think that you would have to think very much as to who you would choose to carry them. For as far as I'm concerned, it was very likely Caleb and Joshua, because by the time they come down here and they find out, well now, what do you think about the land up there? They said, oh yes, the land's exactly what God says it is. Nevertheless, they began to bring an evil report on the land. And they said, we saw the giants there. And when we saw the giants, we were just like grasshoppers in their sight. And that's what we seemed to them. Well, you see, it all depends what you get your eye on. The 10, they got their eye on the giants. But you see, the other two, they got their eye on the fruit and the grapes that was in the land of Canaan. And so when they come back, they brought a good report as to the land. Oh, they said, but, and they named all the nations that were up here, and they said, we'll never be able to take. We could never face that enemy. God had already said, I'm going to bring you into it. I'm going to give it to you. I'm surely going to bring you into it. But you see, they didn't believe God. Really, they didn't believe God in the first, or they never would have asked for spies to go up for further information. And when they come back down again, they didn't believe God either. And so they got the people all stirred up. And immediately that false report was brought, then the people began to murmur and to cry. Did you notice in all the movements of the people of Israel, they sure did a lot of crying, didn't they? They sure did a lot of weeping. God saw a lot of tears, and some of them were absolutely unnecessary. You know, there are tears sometimes in the pathway of God and His divine leading. But I think, dear brethren, if you have traversed the way with us up until now, you'll find that there was really no reason for their tears. If there were tears and weeping and sorrow, then they brought it upon themselves by disobedience and refusing to believe God. And sometimes our tears are brought upon us by our own waywardness, by simply not believing God. Oh, the people said we should have stayed in Egypt. Or we should have, would God we had died in this wilderness. We're not able to go up there. And Joshua and Caleb stilled the people. You know, it's a wonderful thing to have men when there seems to be a crisis among the people of God, and when there seems to be a disturbance, and it seems that unbelief comes in, and the people of God get into a turmoil. It's a wonderful thing when we have men among us who can still the people of God, not stir them up further, but by a word from God, able to still them, to still the people. And so these two men who believed God, Joshua and Caleb, they said, we're well able to take it. God is with us and there'll be bread for us. You see, that's the language of overcomers. That's the language of men who don't look upon the giants but look upon their God. So they said, we're well able to do it. Well now, as a result of that, God says, these men that brought the false report and those who would rather die in the wilderness, these men now will never go up into the land of Canaan. And so, that then is introduced to us the 38 years of wandering here until they all died in the wilderness. And you'll notice there were those, of course, who changed their mind and they presumed to go up. And of course, when they went up and beat the enemies that they had so loudly proclaimed to the people of God and discouraged them, those enemies came down and destroyed them, every one. And yet you see, when God said, I'll give you the land, God was going to march at their head. But you see, they wanted to see for themselves. In other words, sight is better than faith. And sometimes the people of God are not really prepared to put confidence in what God says. They want really to see something. Well, the result was they never entered into the land. When you move over now in chapter 14, I want you to notice that in chapter 14, the Spirit of God reminds us of this government that we have spoken about. But as for you, your carcasses, they shall fall in this wilderness, and your children shall wander. I want to point out something to you here. If you'll notice in verse 33, your children shall wander in the wilderness 40 years. And bear your whoredoms until your carcasses be wasted in the wilderness. Now, that's an interesting word in verse 33. Your children, children, shall wander. Now, some would think, well, now why should the children be made to suffer because of the behavior of their parents? Well, now, that's not really what the verse says. Because if you look in your concordance, and I hope you use a good concordance, but if you look at that concordance, you'll see that that word wander simply means your children shall pasture in the wilderness. What does that mean? Well, it means when you go to the book of Deuteronomy, while these other men perished, while those who were the children who were to be pastured and who were to go into the land, why the book of Deuteronomy tells them that God fed them with manna the 40 years long. Not only that, but their shoes and their clothes never wore out. So you see, if you look at the authorized version, you would nearly think that here were children now, and they've got to wander through this barren desert here until all those have fallen and they have all died. Not so. God was to care for them, he was to feed them, he was to clothe them, and he was to put shoes in their feet. Because you see, God is a God of great kindness. So when you get that word wandering in relation to the children, you'll remember, won't you, that God is talking about them pasturing. God is talking about feeding them there. Even during that long sojourn, God is supporting them and feeding them and looking after them. I suppose that's the reason that Darby wrote that hymn. In the wilderness, God will teach thee what a God that thou hast found. Not these men who refused, but those whose purpose it is to go through the wilderness until finally they come into the land. Now, when you come to chapter 15, I want you to notice, this is the best way for us to move along here, rather than read lengthy. Look at chapter 15 and verse 1. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, when ye be come into the land of your habitations, which I give unto you, and will make an offering by fire unto the Lord. That's all that we necessarily need to read there. Because chapter 15 is taken up in regards to the question of the priesthood when they would be in the land. So you see, God here is executing government, so there's a whole multitude of people that are not going up into the land. But in the very next statement, God says, when you become into the land. So you see, Moses had gone to intercede. And you know, I believe, the man who was so near to God in fellowship and communion, he could speak intimately with God. You know, it has been a privilege sometimes to hear older men, even as you knelt with them in prayer, how they would speak to God. It always impressed me that there was a simple intimacy about their approach to God. Sometimes we're so official. But you know, they would talk just as if they were talking to a companion. Talking just as if it was a friend they were talking to. Well, now Moses, he went before the Lord, and he says, now Lord, listen. He says, if you don't take these people into the land as you have promised, all these nations up here, do you know what they're going to say? They're going to say, he wasn't able to bring them in. He wasn't able to bring them in. And you know, as Moses talked so intimately and so confidently with God, because he was a man who was in the good of the mind of God, and God delighted to hear his servant come and speak in that way, that brought out the confidence and communion of a man with his God. God had every intention of bringing him in. His word was supplied, and God would never break his word. He would bring them in. But you see, Moses goes and speaks to God in regards to this matter. And so, he pastured the children and those that were to grow up in the wilderness until from Kadesh Barnea, you remember, they were to move into the land. But as far as the spies went up around here, right up, and they saw the land, it was a good land, but were not able to take it, and consequently, they brought that false report. Now I want you to move over to chapter 16. And you might say that from chapter 15 to chapter 20, that comprises then the details of what took place during this particular course of the wanderings. And you'll notice that the first thing that is suggested to us here in chapter 15 is this, that God gives certain principles and certain laws that were to operate in view of the people going into the land. And you'll notice, of course, he speaks here about the Sabbath. And in the verse 32, the Spirit of God tells us that here was a man, and while the children of Israel were in the wilderness, they found a man that gathered sticks upon the Sabbath day. And they that found him gathering sticks brought him unto Moses and Aaron, and unto all the congregation. And they put him in ward, because it was not declared what should be done to him. Now the idea of that simply is this. It's not just that they didn't know what to do with him judicially. It was simply this, they didn't know in what way to carry out that particular judgment. And so they put him in ward until they would ask God. And God said, he will be taken out and stoned. Taken out and stoned. You see, the sin here before us was presumptuous sin. Presumptuous. And you know, dear brethren, the Word of God makes it abundantly clear that under law, there was no mercy for presumptuous sin. And if perhaps you remember David took that ground that it was presumptuous, then God overruled in his mercy. But he had to set law aside to do it, because the law knew no mercy. That's the reason it's a wonderful thing when you come to your New Testament, and you see the child of God is not under law, but under grace. Did you ever think, I look over this audience, and it's good to see you, and you look up here and you see the preacher, do you know if we had been under law instead of under grace, there's not one of us who'd been here tonight? Do you believe that? I see some nodding their head and some look vacantly, as if you really didn't believe it. Well, I want to tell you, you wouldn't be here. You wouldn't be here. Because oftentimes in the past of our unregenerate lives, we sinned with a high hand presumptuously, and somehow or another, it never cost us a thought. Had we been under law, there would have been no mercy. Isn't it a wonderful thing? Why, well, did that man write, amazing grace. How sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. My, we should thank God for the wonderful dispensation that we live in, the dispensation of the grace of God. Here we are, and even under grace, even since God has saved us, how kindly and patiently and tenderly he has dealt with us. Why, men wouldn't deal with us so gently and tenderly as our Father has dealt with us, even since we could see it. But here's a man acts presumptuously, even after God has set his law down in relation to the Sabbath. God says he'll be taken out, and he'll be stoned to death. Now it's interesting, right immediately after that, the Spirit of God gives directions in relation to this pilgrim people that on the borders of their garment they shall wear the ribbon of blue, or the tassels of blue, so that you can see the picture that between them and the desert sand there would be the blue. And you'll notice it wasn't for others to look at. And it wasn't for God to look at. But he says, when you look upon it, when you look upon it, then you'll remember to keep the commandments of God and to do them. I have no doubt that you have that typical picture brought in its fulfillment in the epistle to the Colossians chapter 3, where the Spirit of God reminds us, if ye be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ sitteth at the right hand of God. In other words, we are a heavenly people, and we should move as marked by the riband of blue. In other words, between us and earth, there should be that blue, that heavenly character, that heavenly relationship, and when we look upon it, it should keep us in our movements, in our behavior, in our attitude, that we should remember that we're a people no longer in relationship to earth, but a people that's traveling home to the glory. So, you have this particular principle brought in. Immediately after judgment has been executed upon a principle of presumption, God says, you'll put the ribbon to blue, and when you look upon it, you'll remember to do. So Paul lifts that particular principle in, because what has he been dealing with in chapter 2 of the Epistle to the Colossians? He has been dealing with those who would seek the people of, put the people of God under law, and under ordinances, and under ritual. And dear brethren, can't you see that Paul knew better that he should have them on the grounds of grace, not linked with earth at all of the law, but a heavenly people awaiting the coming of the Lord Jesus. Now then you move on in connection with this, and you come to chapter 16. And I believe perhaps chapter 16, it takes place here, somewhere around Kadesh Barnea. We should keep this in our mind that while most of the charts and the maps show you this large circle here, indicating that they had moved quite a bit down. At the same time, it may be that those who perished very likely had wandered all around here. But as far as the people of God who it was their wont to be preserved, you must remember that there's no thought in the movements of the book of Deuteronomy or the book of Numbers that the tabernacle of the congregation that was brought right up here ever moved from there. In other words, we're going to see that it's very likely that the tabernacle of the congregation remained there. In other words, you can appreciate that, brethren. God wasn't going to accommodate wanderings by moving the tabernacle of the congregation to suit the wanderings of these people who were wandering because of their flesh. No. God would still have a place where those who sought the Lord would find them. And I believe there was no movement in relation to the tabernacle until they moved up into the land. You look carefully at the book of Deuteronomy, look carefully later in the book of Numbers, and you'll find there's no indication at all of any movement of the ark or the tabernacle at all. It remains here. In other words, God says, I'm here where you left me. I'm here where you left me. If you want me, you'll find me here. His presence was still there with those who sought the Lord. This big circle here is to indicate those for whom there was nothing but government, who had no longer any relationship at all with the tabernacle, and who moved out into the wilderness until they perished. We'll see the importance of that in a few moments when we come to chapter 19. But we're dealing now with chapter 16. And in chapter 16, you find another crisis in relation to what I'm pointing out to you in relation to the tabernacle of the congregation. You'll notice that the ringleaders here was a man by the name of Korah. Now Korah really was a descendant of Kohath. And you remember, as we pointed out to you, that Kohath, the tribe of Kohath, were those who had the great privilege of carrying the ark and the holy vessels of the sanctuary. They had a great privilege. Now they didn't function in priesthood. Because, you see, the priesthood had been established in Aaron. But they had the privilege of carrying those holy vessels. And so as Levites, they had a most important job. They had no wagons. They carried them on their shoulders. But you'll notice here's one of their descendants now, by the name of Kohath. And then, notice, brethren, two other men and their sons of Reuben. Did you ever wonder why the two sons of Reuben should line themselves up with a descendant of the son of Kohath? I can see all right. Because, you see, as far as the Levites were concerned, they were taken instead of the firstborn. The firstborn was set aside. And do you remember in the book of Genesis, when the old man was had his sons before him, do you remember the first one that came before him? It was Reuben. The firstborn. Do you know what he said about Reuben? You remember? Unstable as water, thou shalt not excel. Do you know that Reuben should have had three particular glories or crowns, if you like? He should have had the privilege and could have had it of approaching the altar. He could have had priesthood. Not only he could have princely dignity amongst the people of Israel. Not only that, but he had all the rights of the firstborn, but because of the working of the flesh in Reuben, he lost it all. And you remember, the firstborn blessing went to Joseph. And you remember the kingly crown went to Judah. And you remember the priestly character went to Levi. But notice now, here is Korah, a descendant of Kohath. And here's the two sons of Reuben that were displaced and set aside and missed the firstborn blessing. And they get together. And now, it's not a question of speaking against God. It's a question now of speaking against Moses and against Aaron. Now you remember further down here, Miriam had tried that. Didn't work very well. The discipline of God came down upon her. We don't need to go over that again. But here's another outbreak of rebellion and opposition against constituted authority. Dear brethren, as we look at some of the pictures, and you don't just have to look at them within the scheme of this teaching. You may look through the record of the Old Testament and you'll find, and I would that we could learn the lesson, it is a most serious thing to pit yourself against designated authority. In other words, God had authority in relation to the tabernacle. God had authority in relation to kingship. God had authority in relation to the assembly. And it is a most serious thing. I hope we learn the lesson not to touch or to seek to break down or to seek to undermine designated authority. Because God recognizes the principle of authority. And there was the authority of Moses, and there was the authority of Aaron. These men said, you two take too much on yourselves. Are you old enough to have heard that language? I've heard. Rising up against constituted authority. Oh, dear child of God, particularly if you're young, let me advise you, don't do it. And let me suggest to you, never align yourself with any who intend to do it. Do you know what?
You'll come out on the wrong side, and you'll be standing against God in the conflict and in the crisis. I said you take too much on yourselves. And you see the Levites. This man wasn't content with a particular ministry that they were so privileged to have. Well, they said, I want something more. I want the priesthood. You say, what makes you think he wanted the priesthood? Well, I tell you, I'm just thinking about it because God indicates it very clearly to me. That's what he was after, the priesthood. God says, I tell you what to do. And that's, of course, after chapter 15. These men are called up. Moses called up. He says, we're not coming up. We're not coming up. And God does something here he never did before. He opens up the earth and swallows them. And the Spirit of God says, do you know what it says? The first time ever you find that in the Word of God. But you can link it with the book of the Revelation because it's going to happen again. The earth opened up and it swallowed them down and their belongings. And it says they went down into the grave. No, they went down into Sheol alive. In other words, God says, we'll bypass death for you men and we'll take you right down without dying. Brethren, when you come to the book of the Revelation, there are two men under satanic authority, and they have banded together to seek to move against delegated authority in relation to the Lord Jesus and in relation to the people of God over which he rules. And God's going to do the very same thing for them. When that final moment comes in relation to their judgment, God's going to send them alive into the lake of fire. Never known before, because unregenerate people died before they went there, and their bodies were buried. But as far as this particular judgment, it was such a crisis, and such solemnity in the eyes of God, God opened the earth and swallowed them. And I want to tell you, the people of God, when they saw that, that steadied things. Now God says, I want you to do something. He says to Moses, stand back out of my way. And he says, I'll destroy them all. Moses says to Aaron, can't you see him? He says, Aaron, get your censer. Fill it with fire and get out into the midst of the camp and make intercession for them. Oh, I tell you, dear brother, and listen, spiritual men, that's how they move. Even when saints at times rise up against them, their only desire is for the good of the saints and to put wisdom into their soul lest the judgment of God fall upon them. That's the characteristic of a true shepherd. He's prepared to move for God and allow God to move. But Moses says, Aaron, take your censer and get out into the camp and stay the plague. Stay the plague. And you remember, dear brethren, in the tabernacle system, before ever anything was offered to God in relation to the tabernacle, you remember, the priest first of all had to fill his hands with the incense. And that incense covered him there in the presence of God before he went back to place the blood in the propitiatory and give him a standing, satisfied God so that God could go on with the people for another year. Oh, I tell you, Moses, he was a great man, great shepherd. Is it any wonder it says, yea, he loved the people. Yea, he loved the people. Leg was stained. God says, spare them. When you come to chapter 17, he says, I want every man, the head of every tribe, to take a rod. And he says, take those rods and put them up before the Lord. Right in there. Right into the presence of God. And God's going to demonstrate once and for all the question of priesthood and the question of privilege in relation to approach for the people. And to put those rods out during the night. Did you notice that there are two morrows? There's a day of insurrection. But there's two morrows referred to in chapter 16. There was the morrow of divine intervention. You'll notice that in chapter 16. And then the Spirit of God indicates to us as well, now, in the morning, Moses goes in. And only one of those rods, it not only had life, it had fruit. It had almonds. That was the rod of Aaron. Come back here for a minute. See the tabernacle here? These men and those that followed them said, if we can't function as priests in there, we'll set up a tabernacle of our own. We mustn't miss that point. God says, separate yourselves from the tabernacle of these wicked men. In other words, stay with those men and you'll go down the judgment. If you want to live, separate yourselves from the tent or the tabernacle, as the word is, from these. They had actually set up a schismatic tabernacle in opposition to God. You know why? They couldn't get their own way in relation to God's order here. So they said, we'll set something up of our own. You men are older. Does that strike anything in your memory at times? Sure does. Now, how oftentimes we have seen people discontented, and instead of fitting into the place that God has given to them, why, they say we'll move and we'll start something of our own. You check chapter 16 very carefully, and that's the warning of God to them. You better separate yourself from the tents of the tabernacle singular of these wicked men. And I tell you, all who did, they saw the judgment of God overtaken. Then God, of course, in chapter 17, he showed the divine authority for priesthood. Because as far as Aaron's rod was concerned, why, that's the one that bore the fruit. That's the one that budded. You'll notice then that when you come to chapter 20, because we move on, chapter 19, I should point out to you really the reason for chapter 18, of course, comes on the heels of the question of the priesthood being assured to Aaron. So then, he takes up the question of the responsibility of the priest. Now that he has been divinely established, and God in his own, the secret of his own presence, has given now commendation to the priesthood of Aaron. So chapter 18 then is given to us the responsibilities of the priesthood. That need not detain us. That's not our purpose in relation to the question of the journey. But when you come to chapter 19, Not only because the Spirit of God tells us in the book of Deuteronomy that the bodies of many of those who fell here, they strewed the wilderness. Brethren, think about it. There were thousands of them. And their carcasses were dotted all over the wilderness. Can you see the great need for the requirement of a new thing in relation to the ways of God for wilderness defilement? In other words, when you come to the tabernacle, you're dealing with priestly approach on behalf of the people. But now you're dealing with the people themselves as pilgrims and their defilement in the wilderness. Now, we're all old enough to know this. There's not a day goes by. Did you ever come to the conclusion in your thinking that there never was a moment in the world's history as vital and as crucial as to where we are? You can hardly leave your home. You could hardly leave for an hour, go to a store, move around, without being sure by the time you come home, either what you have heard or what you have seen, you go home defiled. Even though you may have prayed before you enter, before you come back again, it will be required that you pray again. And of course, I should say to you, you really don't always need to be in the posture of getting down on your knees to pray. There's times you can't do that. But dear Mr. Frank Knox, a man that could tell you more about praying than I could, but he used to say this, the people of God should be like Nehemiah, because when he stood before a man and needed an answer, he says he just shot one of those wee prayers up into the presence of God and he got the answer right there. That's our God. And you know, sometimes the people of God thought that was simple. I tell you, it was simple, but it was serious. It was serious. Because you and I are like these people who move. Although we're not wanderers, yet we're in the wilderness. This is the point. And because of all the dead bodies that are around us, whether it was a Nazarite in regards to Numbers chapter 5 that we didn't touch, chapter 6, why, there was always the danger of the Nazarite, even in the last days, when he was just about finished with his vow. And the time period of his vow was just about over. And in a careless moment, he inadvertently touched the dead bone. And all the days were lost. In my mind, I've always watched that man or man. As the hours ticked by and the last day came, only a few hours to go until he'll move up with his offering required yonder to the altar of God, and the period of his Nazarite-ship is over. I tell you, he's going to be very careful where he walks. In fact, the words of the Epistle to the Ephesians come to mind, walk circumspectly. Do you know what it means, dear brethren? It just means pick your steps. Pick your steps. And God recognized that there was defilement along the way because the wilderness had become a place of death. Now he says, you'll take a red heifer. And there was only the one red heifer. Upon which there never came you. And the Spirit of God gives directions. It'll be slain before the priest, because it's in view of a priestly work. And then you'll burn it to ashes. And you'll mix it with the water, because there was water of purification before that. But that was for a priestly people, the later. This is now for a pilgrim people. This is for a people approaching in priesthood. This is for pilgrims seeking to maintain cleanness and order that they might enjoy all that was entailed in fellowship with God in relation to the tabernacle. And so the water of purification was an order that those that had become defiled might avail themselves of that water for cleansing. You know what reminds me? That when you come to the Word of God, the psalmist says, "How and withal shall a young man cleanse his ways? By giving heed thereto, according to thy word." And you see, of course, we keep in our mind, and young believers perhaps might be helped if I suggest this. Don't always go by hymnology. The men oftentimes who wrote our hymns, they were spiritual men, some of them were giants. And in their writing of their hymns, they gave themselves poetic license. They really weren't always going by doctrine when they were thinking about the types. We sang one the other night, and I was hesitant about it, but I thought the people of God will sing it lustily and never likely give it a thought. And so we did. "Wash me in thy precious blood." Now really, we have got to allow for poetic license. But you know, the child of God is not washed in the blood of Christ every time he sins. Now you saints are intelligent enough to know that. Remember, the blood of Christ is for the question of your sin. The blood of Christ is not what gives you judicial standing in the presence of God, that brings you in position. But you see, when it comes to the defilement of our pilgrim pathway, then we come to the water of the Word. And the water of the Word and the basis of the blood cleanses from all defilement. You see, this is not sin. That has to do with the altar. And that had to do with the golden, that had to do with the propitiatory away yonder, beyond the veil. This is the water of purification for defilement. Defilement that we contract every day. "How and all shall a young man cleanse his ways? By giving heed thereto according to thy word." So you see, there's the water of the word for defilement. And so, the red heifer, just like the lamb away back there in Egypt, the red heifer tells us of that unique character. And generally speaking, when you get the feminine idea brought in, you have the thought of state, spiritual state, the subjective side. It was a heifer. Good to keep that in your mind. In other words, when it was a question of the burnt sacrifice in relation to standing, it shall be a meal of the first year. But when it comes to the subjective state of the people of God, the female is brought in. Because that always has got to do with our state, not with our standing. When it's our standing, dear brethren, we stand in all the grandeur and good of the burnt offering. That's the meal of the first year. But when it's a question of defilement in our state, then we are on the ground of the red. There was only one of a kind. You know, there's never any thought of red heifers. A red heifer was the only one. The only one of its kind. Never under bondage to man or Savior. Without spot and pure. So delightful to God. And all that was associated with man, the hyssop. And all that was put under the fire at the burning suggests everything connected with a natural man must go when it comes to the value of the water of purification. Because you see, that water of purification was based on the death of the victim. That's the point. In other words, it's a question now of the water for cleansing for a people who stood in relationship to God by the blood.